So then I was reading this book, I Contain Multitudes. It's about the ways that animals on Earth interact with bacteria and the microbiome of ourselves as humans and of all animals on Earth, and just kind of an exploration of how does that relationship work? How did it work? How do we think about it that is wrong? How do we think about that is right? What do we still have yet to learn? Like for a while after we got the whole germ theory thing down, we were like, all bacteria are bad. And in like since the 90s, basically, we've been like, hey, maybe wait, let's think about this. Some bacteria good. And so it's like still this world that is we're learning so much about year after year. Mm-hmm. And so this is a section on whale falls. And the word is chemosynthetic bacteria. The way that we are something synthetic, plants are photosynthetic. They take photons and turn that into energy. The term is capturing carbon, or maybe fixing carbon. Fixing carbon is the terminology. I don't know what that means exactly, but plants use photons to do this fixing carbon thing. We take the fixed carbon from plants. If you are too low in the ocean for the sun to reach you, you can't do photosynthesis. You need to find another way to fix carbon. Mm-hmm.
Or have one the way energy that to fix carbon.
Right. One way that that happens is with bacteria. They can capture the sulfides coming out of geothermal vents and then use those sulfides to create sulfur and fixed carbon. And then we took steps from that over the long evolutionary history, ended up closer to the surface, figured out photosynthesis, began having multicellular organisms. Multicellular organisms were kind of predicated on this idea of photosynthesis. Mm-hmm. And so we started exploring the ocean and assumed that we would not be finding multicellular life below the level where photosynthesis is possible. And then we did. And it was through symbiosis between chemosynthetic bacteria and multicellular organisms that took advantage of them the same way that there are. Chloroplasts are kind of like a weakened photosynthetic bacteria inside of a plant cell.
Right. So just to be clear, evolutionarily speaking, the bacteria in the very deep ocean went up to the surface and developed photosynthesis,
mm-hmm.
and then developed multicellular organisms, and then eventually plants, and then eventually fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fish went back down and started eating, not eating, I don't know, probably eating coexisting with the bacteria down in the bottom of the ocean.
Right. Coexisting would be the word. So there is a phenomenon of whale falls. As you might imagine, whales die. When whales die, whale fall. And if whale fall far, it's like down below the level where photosynthesis can happen. And so now there is this rich, teeming, like full of life in a way that the bottom of the ocean usually is not, space. And so here I'm going to read a little bit from this book. Dead whales, raining upon the ocean floor like manna from heaven, also create sulfide-rich environments that support temporary but teeming communities of chemosynthetic creatures. Some of these, like Osedax mucofloris, the gutless, bone-eating snot flower worm, specialize in whale falls.
Say the name of that one again.
Osedax mucofloris, the gutless, bone-eating snot flower worm.
Gutless, bone-eating... snot flower worm.
Uh-huh. For these animals, life in the deep oceans is the tail end of an evolutionary return trip that spans billions of years. Life on Earth originated at deep sea vents and first took the form of chemosynthetic microbes. These ancestral microbes eventually evolved into the endless forms most beautiful and most wonderful, spreading out of the depths and into the shallows. And some of these more complex forms of life, by partnering with chemosynthetic bacteria, managed to descend back into the abyss to a world that would otherwise be too low in nutrients to support them. All of the animals that live at hydrothermal vents today, Riftia included, evolved from shallow water species that became hosts for deep sea microbes.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. So the gutless bone-eating snot flower worm is the phrase that I read. And I was like, oh, life inherently has no meaning. Because the gutless bone-eating snot flower worm has spent just as much time becoming a chemosynthetic multicellular organism on the ocean floor that in one way or another moves from whale fall to whale fall to get enough nutrients to reproduce to do it again. And it has spent just as much time evolving into the thing that it is as we have spent evolving into the thing that we are.
I love that. I love it.
And if, as I do, you subscribe to the belief that there's nothing ascribing particular meaning to humans besides humans, which is to say there's no, like, God or divine intent to like, get humans on Earth, whether that was through, like, a snap moment or through the long process of evolution that was tweaked and twiddled until it got to the point of humans. In either case, I don't believe in that. I think that at once upon a time in a gassy liquid stew, some molecule was like, hey, I turned me into you. Like by accident, basically. Mm-hmm. And in this big soup then, years and years and years and millennia, we're here at humans. And from what we know so far, we cannot tell that there is intelligent life anywhere else in the universe. You kind of assume there is, but like from what we know, there is not. And from what we understand, if there is, they are just as much an accident of their own evolutionary past as we are of our own. So either we are alone in writing poetry about the stars, or we are kin with these other intelligent life forms somewhere light years and light years away that are writing poetry about the stars. And in either case, we could not have done that and the universe would still have begun.
And would, you know, continue long after we would have started existing and stopped existing. And even the gutless bone-eating snot flower worm.
Uh-huh.
Even that has a expiration date when the, when the whales stop existing, or maybe when the sun blows up. All that can happen, and then the universe will still, like, maybe be making poetry somewhere else.
And none of it was on purpose. And, like, nothing we do is divinely inspired except for our ability to see what is around us and call it divine.
We're God, if you think about it.
I mean, yeah, that's not where I was going, but there is no God here but us. There is no, like, inherent meaning to the any of our behaviors except for those that we give to ourselves. Because no matter what path we take on Earth, as many humans as we bounce around with in this weird soup of a planet, the universe will end up at a point, we think, where it no longer exists, or the Earth will, and that will all have still been an accident for no good reason, except for the reasons that we give it.
So there's like probably a philosopher that I could quote, but like the last bit is the important bit. It's the meaning that we give it is the important bit there. Like, don't just like go full nihilist, probably. Just like, you give your own life meaning, and for like most people, that meaning is going to come from like, I'm gonna define a thing with the word in the definition, but like meaningful social interactions with other people.
Yeah.
Like, and when I say meaningful, like,
it's a thing you do and then you know it.
Yeah, you know it's meaningful because maybe it's just like, you know, weird, vestigial quirks of our biology that it feels meaningful, but like maybe it's just feels meaningful and that's okay. Stop being weird about it. But if you are going to go full nihilist, Jared, I recommend giving away all your money to Worrying Bug, patreon.com/worryingbugs. If life is meaningless, so is your money. Give it to me.
The word I was trying to remember that I thought about in the shower this morning was moral imperative. There's no like big universal moral imperative. There is just the moral imperative to like do good unto others. Because it feels nice.
Back in high school, and Zerdus, I'm sorry, you're probably going to hear this in a little while and then cringe, but back in high school, I went down like a similar sort of like, the things we do are simply for ourselves. And instead of going, ah, that's kind of nice, we can make ourselves feel better by helping other people feel better. I like that. I went the other direction and went like, there are no selfless acts, only selfish acts, because it will make you feel better. So you should just be selfish anyway.
Ah. So that's my particular train of thought about whales.
Thank you for sharing.
Absolutely.
Hey, Zach.
Hey, Liz.
Jared, you might remember a little while ago, I wanted my mouse to work.
I do. I remember that.
I wanted my mouse to work. I wanted it to work both when I was playing Minecraft and when I wasn't playing Minecraft, which seems to me like not that big of an ask, but what the f*** do I know?
Just because I'm not remembering very well, I remember there was like a button or something that should have worked a particular way, but I don't remember the details.
Yeah, it was, the crux of the issue was that the mouse I'm using is the Logitech MX Master 3, and it has more than just the left, right, and scroll wheel buttons.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, there are three thumb buttons that I wanted to do particular things. And the software that Logitech says to use their mouse with to program the buttons refused to work with both Minecraft and the rest of my computer. It could do one or the other, but not really both.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really annoying me. And eventually I found a solution via the Better Touch Tool application, which is amazing. And like, I don't do very much with it, but it just does the few things I do with it much better than any other app.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, Jared, not to put too fine a point on it, but it looks like a spreadsheet. It's not fancy. Like, it's quite simple. It doesn't have like any cute animations or anything. It just does its job and it sits in the background and I don't even think about it unless I need to change something, which I never need to change anything because everything just works. Anyway, but before I discovered that solution, I was trying a bunch of other things, and the thing I kept running into was that the Logitech software wouldn't give up direct control of the mouse. So basically any other app, including Better Touch Tool, that I tried to use to program the buttons was getting short-circuited, I guess, could be a word you could use to describe it, by the Logi Options app.
Yeah.
And it was really, really annoying, and eventually I uninstalled it. So that was my first war with the Logitech Corporation. I am, once again, quite frustrated with the Logitech Corporation because of the software that they make. I got this webcam, or I guess me and my producer got this webcam. We just needed a webcam that to share between us, and it was like $50, and it's not like it's not high end or anything, but it gets the job done. And the default camera settings, if you don't have any other Logitech based software installed, it looks exactly like what you're seeing now, Zach, which in my opinion is not really what I want. I want it to be like a little bit cooler, a little bit less saturated. And like, I don't know if you see this, Zach, but like my headphones look too sharp in my opinion. I think like, it seems very focused on my headphones and I don't like it. And same with my hair. Like it just like, you can see every single strand of hair and I don't want that because it doesn't look good. So I downloaded the Logitech G Hub, which allowed you to have some rudimentary controls over the camera, which good enough. But the Logitech G Hub, Zach, doesn't respect you. Doesn't respect you as a user. It opens itself on login. Even it, and I can't figure out how to turn it off. I can't. There's no like, I went into the settings with the thing and the system settings does not include the Logitech G Hub. The Logitech G Hub settings window, I uncheck the thing that says start at login. And like, I have tried all the little, I've tried to delete it from the startup items in every way that I could think of, and it still launches on startup.
Yeah.
So that's really annoying because like, you're a utility and I don't need you when, especially I certainly don't need you when the camera is not even plugged in.
Right.
And you seem to completely ignore any request to not start at login. And it's not like in the background, it's not like a menu bar item. It's a big old window with lots of little animations, and it's accessing the network for some reason. And
very cool.
And
firmware updates, I guess.
And ransomware is like, hey, G Hub is maybe changing your files. I'm not really sure. And I'm like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And now, but I'm like, okay, but I do want to look good in my camera. So I'm going to deal with it. And that could have been where it ended, but no, this morning when I was getting ready for the podcast, I turned on my computer, it launched just like normal, but this time it didn't get past its startup screen and it just kept like doing the loading animation where it like, it turns into a G, and then it turns into an L, and then it turns into a G, and then it turns into an L, and then it turns into a G. And so now I have an app that doesn't respect me and my wishes, that doesn't even do anything.
Right.
And I'm like, if I uninstall this, what's going to happen? Is it just going to like reinstall itself back onto my computer? Probably not. But like, that's the sort of like relationship I'm having with this app. And it's really frustrating. Logitech, please make a better app. Logitech, make a good app. 2022 challenge impossible.
Yeah. Maybe things need to be less magical again. I think this is maybe part of the Web3 manifesto.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to find a way to separate this from a whole other topic that I like wrote down like four notes on, and now I feel like it connects to every other thing in my life, and I'm not ready to bring it up right now. But this is a case where it would be very nice to have your own control over this thing. In like a Richard Stallman kind of way.
Could you tell Jared what that means? Because I definitely know what that means, but maybe Jared doesn't.
Richard Stallman is not a man to be respected, but did begin like the free software movement. Because some like printer spooling protocol wasn't working the way that he wanted it to, and he couldn't get it to do the thing that he wanted. And so he wrote like all of GNU, or not all of, he had the idea for all of GNU, because he couldn't get this printer to spool correctly.
That's really funny.
'Cause the idea is like, at as many levels of this as possible, I should be able to make this very powerful device do the thing that I want it to, especially as like, as the kind of person who has decided to put my time and energy into understanding how this all works, I should be able to reroute the flow of this energy to do the thing that I want it to do.
Yeah.
And the thing that comes directly in contact with and in opposition to is, for all of the people who have not spent so much time and energy learning how this all works and how to expect things to work, we just want it to be magical. We just want the printer to do what it does normally, and if it doesn't, you call somebody and they like work at HP and have access to reroute the thing. But there's no like middle ground for, I don't work at HP, but I understand how I should be able to reroute these energies. I'm using like wizard metaphors, I'm realizing. I should be able to like change the software that runs on my systems, is the core idea. And so in a very similar way, you should be able to like take the bits that come into your computer and turn them into the thing that you want to display in the FaceTime screen. And it seems like right now, the only way that you're allowed to do that is with the LG G Hub application.
Logitech, but yeah.
Logitech G Hub application. But like, it's still just bits coming into your computer.
Yeah. Which is that's really frustrating to me. I'm not 100% sure that there's no other way to do it, but when you Google, like, how do I change the settings on this camera that I bought, like, everything just directs you to this piece of software.
Somebody on Reddit is trying to make an open source Logitech hub, and it doesn't look like it went anywhere. I am always very dubious of projects that begin their life as someone on Reddit posting, would anyone else like to do this with me?
Yeah. I don't, you should certainly shouldn't count on it. Like, one day this random Reddit user will save me from Logitech's tyranny.
And there's no, like, better camera tool, is there?
There certainly might be. I don't know what it is, so.
Audio hijack, but for cameras.
Maybe I could, like, route everything through OBS. And then make a fake you camera could, that FaceTime could use.
Yeah. And then OBS probably has
camera, some sort of camera control. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you're one step closer to beginning your career streaming Celeste on Twitch.
Yeah, exactly. I guess it's more likely to be Stardew or Minecraft at this point, but Celeste is still like one of my favorite games.
So. I am pretty sure you owe our patrons access to your Celeste streams.
They got it.
But yeah, we'll have to check the wording. Maybe that's just only if you do Celeste streams, they have access to it.
Maybe one day. I have a lot of podcasts to edit. I don't have time to stream, Zach.
I do keyboard things. This is a related thought, I promise. I do keyboard things often at my job, and also mouse things often at my job. So for a lot of hours of every day, I am sitting there doing keyboard and mouse things. And so I've been thinking about how to make those less bad for my hands and their extended longevity. And one of the ways I would like to do that is to get a trackball mouse and use that at work. But the one shape of trackball mouse that I have experienced and like is made by a single company, Kensington. And all of the like open source trackball mice, which like if I'm going to get one, why not get one that's open source, are... They're the bad shapes.
Yeah. Got to 3D print a new housing for your trackball mouse.
Open source trackball mouse. That's a kind of guy. A kind of guy who is 3D printing a new housing for his open source trackball mouse.
People love 3D printing things.
Yeah. I would too if I had a 3D printer.
Yeah, probably. When I had access to a 3D printer, I was 3D printing things for sure.
Yeah. I still follow the... What was the software that we used all the time? SolidWorks?
Yeah, yeah.
I still follow them on LinkedIn. Get updates every once in a while from like Paul at LinkedIn, at Paul at SolidWorks on LinkedIn.
Networking.
They used SolidWorks to make the space shuttle. That's pretty cool, but it's not... I don't... Right now, in this moment... I'm not making a space shuttle and do not have access to SolidWorks.
It's an expensive piece of software, if I remember right.
Yeah, maybe they have like a I'm making an open source trackball mouse kind of license, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
The way that like GitHub, if it's all open source, or Travis CI, if it's all open source, they'll let you do some nice things.
I like encouraging open source things. That's good.
Yeah, I think maybe OBS is going to be your best path here, but also Logitech Do Better Challenge 2021. They should have done already. Come on, Logitech.
Slacking. I don't know much about the process of... I'm sure it's very difficult to make such a complex piece of software as GHub, but... I also think that you could make the software simpler and it would work better, at least from, like, you could make the UI a lot simpler and have it do less things, and the rest of it would benefit not only because you would have more time to work on it because you're not, like, trying to make it look all nice, but also because the way that users interact with your software require it, like for users to interact with your software, they need to go through the UI, which necessitates the stuff that's like the reason I have this installed on my computer. There's like that code. And then there's like the UI.
Mm-hmm.
And those two things need to interact, and they're going to need to interact no matter what. But if your UI is also super complicated, so complicated that sometimes it just breaks and the rest of the software doesn't work because you can't access it through the UI that you made. I would like to poke at it from under the hood.
Mm-hmm.
but I can't because it's closed source. And like, even if it was open source, I don't know if I would have the background context and knowledge to poke at it the way I would not want to. So even if I like was the type of person to make GNU because my printer wasn't working.
Right.
I don't think that's necessarily the best solution. I don't necessarily want that either, you know? I just want the software to work. It's not a bad camera. It's really not a bad camera. It like it cameras. It's like it's better than the one I have in my laptop by quite a large margin. I wish the software that Logitech ships with it, not ships with it even, it's you have to go download it from a website, but
I think this is like one of those things that you need a class lens for, maybe. Like the material interests of the Logitech are such that the workers using their cameras are inherently in opposition to what Logitech wants. Maybe that's the analysis on this.
Yeah, let's start with the conclusion and then work our way backwards and see if we can make that work.
Well, not starting with the conclusion, just like I've seen this story before. You know, we can skip a couple steps.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Logitech's interests are such that I will never be satisfied with their software.
Yeah.
So who wants to start an open source project with me?
You can post about it on Reddit.
I can.
I don't know if you were looking for a resounding or satisfying conclusion on that thought.
No,
I know that I have not provided one. Okay.
No, I just needed to talk about this. I'm just mad and wanted to express that.
So Logitech is this big behemoth of an institution that even if you could make your desires for better software known to them, one, they're not directly interested in your opinion. Their power is not predicated on your opinion, just on there not being a better product in the market, right?
Mm-hmm.
And two, I don't know what the two is. I think that's the biggest part of it that I am thinking about here, is that like, even if Logitech was hearing your opinion, they would not be interested in it because they would not need to be. There's no...
Yeah. They already got me.
Self-enforcing set of structures.
I have the camera. I'm not going to go out and buy another camera because I'm not satisfied with the saturation levels. Some people might do that, but like me and everyone else who is slightly dissatisfied with the picture quality is not going to.
Mm-hmm. But it's still like a thing that you wish were better and that you know would like have a positive impact on your life if it were better.
Yeah.
In opposition to that, the American government has some things that could be better. And also, their power is predicated on, in some fractional sense, my opinion. through, you know, self-enforcing structures that are not actually self-enforcing. They're just enforced by other people. Smart contracts.
Smart contracts. What if we put the government on the blockchain?
What if we put the government on the blockchain? We could not do that instead.
That's a good idea. It's a real good idea.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if you'd thought about it before, so I just wanted to bring it up as a possibility. So one of the things that the American government does and maybe could do better and that I have opinions about is trains. The American government do trains. And like, that's pretty cool. Trains, pretty cool. Steel on steel as opposed to rubber on road, and then smaller vehicles after you get off of that fixed route, that's going to be a lot more efficient than just rubber on road. And that's important in this era of actually legitimately worrying about global climate change, please.
U.S. government care about the climate 2022 challenge impossible.
And so, like, the government does trains, and I took one of those trains, and that's real cool. That's my opinion. You heard it here first, and the American government will be hearing it in November when I vote directly. I will write in. I'll do a write in for every single candidacy, and I will just write trains.
Trains.
But before I do that, you guys get to hear what I think about trains, which is that they're really cool. So I took a train, the Hiawatha line from Milwaukee down to Chicago. I've done that before. It's like a regular train route that they will be making more frequent, and that's good. One of these days we will do things, we will do 24-hour transit, and this is not one of those days. But the Hiawatha line is improving its headways, the gaps between one train leaving and the next train leaving. And it's like a pretty good train. It gets you where you're trying to go. Good stuff. Then from Chicago to Denver, Colorado, I took the California Zephyr. And that is, I think, a once daily train that goes from Chicago to St. Louis, I believe, somewhere in California. And on the way, it stops in Denver and a bunch of other places. And I was in a sleeper car. I had a great time in the sleeper car. I heard somebody else review sleeper cars as like, it's now part of your vacation. You spend your time getting there, and this is also the vacation. You're just like hanging out on the sleeper car, and I definitely felt that. By the time I was done with my time in the sleeper car, I was ready to like get out and go explore the city and go do all of the like fun parts of the vacation without having to be like, okay, give me 2 days first. I need to unwind from work. And so out and back, I was in the sleeper car. I was just kind of like chilling on the train. And able to like fully rest and have control over the temperature in the little room that I was in. And so that was really cool. And I would really strongly recommend taking a sleeper car to get to wherever you're going, because that is just then part of the vacation.
That sounds pretty sick.
Yeah. And also, sometimes things need repairing, and this train in particular needed some repairing. It had an issue with the brake lines where they would come uncoupled. And Liz, you're making some very big eyeballs, and probably Jared, you are also listening and making some very big eyeballs. But the thing is, they engineered this in a smart way, which is that when the brake lines come uncoupled or whatever was happening, something with the brake lines, all of the brakes go on. They go, we are no longer doing the signal back and forth. We're going to turn on now because the other default would be bad.
Yeah, I'm glad it works like that. That's a smart way for it to work.
And one thing that means is that as you're riding along on the train will just very quickly go, and now you're stopped and you're waiting for the brake line to get fixed, and then they fix it and you get moving along again. And that's like a little bit, you're like, oh no, the brake lines, but actually it's fine. It does the right thing by default, and you cannot expect a mechanical thing to work all of the time, especially under the conditions that we expect Amtrak to run. But like when things go wrong, it handles it the right way. That's nice. My thought on brake lines. The other thing, though, about the mechanics going wrong and then like stopping to fix it, which is what you want to do, is that Amtrak does not own most of the rail right-of-ways that they travel on. Mostly they are owned by freight rail companies, and Amtrak just has an agreement with those freight rail companies that like, okay, from this hour to this hour, we will be passing a train through this section of your track. And so don't have any other trains there and we'll be going through, and all the signaling and everything, you make sure that that's not going to cause problems. You're not just like, ah, we have a contract that says there are no trains on this rail. They signal and everything, but they also say, hey, whatever freight rail company, make sure you don't plan to have something going through at this time, because mm-hmm. we've got the right of way here. But that also means then that if they stop a couple times to fix the brake lines or stop a number of times for things that happened before I got on the return train, you are now no longer within that contracted window of time. And so you have to wait your turn at every leg of the journey to make sure that there's nothing else utilizing that track, because they're continuing their operations as normal. And this Amtrak train does not get priority because, like, these are people and that is coal. And probably if we get the people somewhere, like, they have less elasticity in their timeline than the coal does. But it's not based on making things better for people. And it is instead based on what agreements companies have arrived at. And the agreements that have been arrived at are that Amtrak comes second if they don't do the thing in their time.
Right.
And so that's tough, because we could also instead have done this a number of different ways. We could have said, hey, passenger rail is going to get the right of way. Hey, Amtrak is going to start owning a bunch of rail lanes, or they're going to make their own. Whatever the thing is, there are a lot of things that could be better about that arrangement, and that making those, that letting those continue to be the way that they are hurts the feasibility of train travel in America.
Yeah, I can see that.
But if being on the sleeper car is already part of your vacation, that doesn't suck as much. It just means you can't rely on a train to get you to, like, an important business meeting at a particular time.
Right. Or you would need to have some sort of, like, how do I put this? Like, there are things, like, so let's say that your next most viable alternative to train travel is air travel, mm-hmm. in terms of, like, getting you to a business meeting at a certain time. There, it is not as if airplanes are 100% reliable. It is not as if airplanes don't get delayed.
Right.
And so, like, in that way, it's not so different. It's just that, like, the people you're going to be having the meeting with have a better understanding of, like, the delays that can happen via air travel than mm-hmm. the delays that can happen via train travel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are some acceptable reasons to be late to your business meeting, and there are some unacceptable reasons, and perhaps unfairly, and I say perhaps, but, like, unfairly, mm-hmm. the trains have, like, been, are in the unreasonable category for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like a, that's what you get for using trains, you idiot, sort of, like.
Right, uh-huh.
That's the vibe I get.
Uh-huh.
Haven't you heard? Airplanes have been invented.
One other very cool thing about rail, as opposed to an airplane, is that it is a lot more possible to electrify rail than to electrify an airplane. And then if you've got something on the electric grid, it is easier to transition it to a renewable resource than trying to power, self-power a train engine off of a renewable resource.
Right. It's going to put a nuclear reactor in my train.
I think that is the plot of Snowpiercer.
Doesn't mean it's a good idea.
I'm pretty sure Snowpiercer was a dystopia.
Yeah, right.
That's my take on trains.
It's a good thing, Zach.
Vote for trains, because once we have trains electrified, you can travel in ways that are less harmful to the world. United States care about the global climate crisis. 2020 challenge impossible. Possible?
not clickbait?
Vote Trains 2022. And now, a PSA from the worrying bugs. Children are bundles of obligations, theirs and ours to them. And their vulnerability and needs leave little room for the sort of political freedom the imaginary liberal subject is presumed to have. This has been a PSA from the worrying bugs.
Jared, if you have a way for me to control my camera without installing more Logitech software on my computer.
Or if you are a deep sea bone eating snot worm, you can reach out and tell me about it on Twitter. I'm at